Welcome to the Hamilton Spectator Newsroom Insider Podcast. I'm David Crosby. I'm joined today by Susan Claremont. Susan, you've got a pretty incredible story in this weekend's paper. Why don't you tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, it's a heartbreaking story. Do you remember that day back in May, May 16th, when police closed down Highway 403 and it caused a massive traffic jam all over the city and backed up outside the city, and motorists were stuck in traffic for hours that day, and I was one of them, and wondering why, what was going on, what was happening. And it turned out that what was happening was that a young woman named Nicole Patnode, who was 20 years old and suffering from mental illness, had jumped off a bridge onto Highway 403. And I have spent the last 2 months learning about Nicole's life and her suicide, and spending time with her family, who want desperately for people to know Nicole as someone more than just the girl who jumped off the bridge.
So how did that come about? How did you find out the identity of this person? How did you get in touch with the family?
Yeah, this came about in an unusual way, which is that literally moments after Nicole jumped, one of the Spectator's photojournalists, Barry Gray, was asked to photograph this massive traffic jam. And Barry knows the area well, and so he went to the pedestrian bridge that is on the Hamilton-Brantford Rail Trail, thinking that he could...
The top of the mountain? Or sort of up in Ancaster?
It's near Aberdeen.
Oh, okay.
So at the bottom. And he was thinking, and rightfully so, that he could get out onto that pedestrian walkway and get a view of the traffic that was backed up all the way up the mountain. And he, in fact, got to that bridge before police ever arrived at the bridge. And he was there just expecting to take a picture of traffic. And what he found was a pair of woman's shoes and a sweater. And he instinctively knew what that was about, and he photographed the clothing. And he brought it back to the newsroom, and there was lots of discussion about whose clothing was it, what was that about. We all thought that we knew what was going on. We assumed that it was a suicide and that someone had jumped off the bridge, but we didn't know that for certain. And that's where it all began, with I got brought into it to try to find out what was going on. And then it developed into who was this woman and what was her story and how does a person get to that point in their life when that seems like the only solution. So I reached out to police. It was the OPP's case, and asked them point blank if this was a suicide, and they refused to tell me whether or not it was. A few days after all this happened, there was a death notice in our paper for Nicole Patnode, and it just seemed to fit what had happened that day, that she had been struggling with mental illness. She had died suddenly, and that led me to her family. And, you know, it's always, I think it's probably the most difficult part of my job is to reach out to families after someone has died, and introduce myself and ask them if they'd like to talk to me and if they'd like to give me a picture of their loved one who's passed away. We call that doing a pickup, and I've done hundreds of them throughout my career, but it never gets easier, frankly. And so I was concerned about and nervous and apprehensive about reaching out to Nicole's family, and I went through Facebook, left a note, and I was at home one evening, that same evening that I'd left the note, and got a call on my cell phone from Nicole's mom, Carol, who said, oh, thank you for wanting to tell Nicole's story. And that began 2 months of lots of interviews, lots of time together as I began to piece together Nicole's life.
So let me ask you about that. You said earlier that they wanted to get Nicole's story out there.
Yeah.
Which aspect of that? Why was Carol happy to hear from you? What does she want people to hear?
I asked her that question directly because it's part of my responsibility, I think, as a journalist, to make sure people are fully understanding what they're getting themselves into, particularly when they're going through a crisis like this. And also so that I would be sure that they were doing it for good reasons. So what Carol said to me was that, first off, she wanted people to know who her daughter was. She wanted them to know the happy parts of Nicole's life and the good parts of her life, rather than just being that girl that jumped off the bridge and caused a traffic jam. But she also said, and this was really, really powerful to me, she said, there is no shame in mental illness, and there is no shame in suicide. And that resonated with me in a big way, because as a journalist who has written a lot about mental illness and about suicide, those are two issues that I come back to over and over and over again. I really agree with her that there is no shame in either of those things. And the only way that we can get past the stigma and the shame that so many people feel around those issues is to be open about it and to talk about it and to tell stories like Nicole's.
So how do you think Nicole could have been better served then? I mean, are you comfortable speculating on that? I'm wondering about, you mentioned this, the absence of a mental health court in the Hamilton area.
Right. So Nicole committed assaults, few of them, three or four of them, in her life, some as an adult, some when she was still a youth. They were always against her healthcare provider, so she would be in hospital receiving mental health treatment, and she would physically lash out at doctors and nurses. The family even tells stories about her punching cops and punching paramedics. So she wound up with a criminal record. And one of the many interviews I did for this story was a woman who was her lawyer for a while. And as it happens, I had done a big story not that long ago about raising the question of whether there's a need for a specialized mental health court in Hamilton. And Nicole's lawyer and I both thought that she would be a perfect candidate for that kind of court if we had one here. She wasn't a bad person. Her crimes were committed because of her mental illness. And though they were violent, she hadn't caused grave injuries to anybody. But the whole idea behind a special mental health court is to get treatment rather than punishment. And someone like Nicole could have really benefited from that. So that's one of the things that maybe could have been done better or differently. I don't know that I have a lot of answers, but I have a lot of questions, and not all of them are answered or maybe ever could be answered. But, you know, Nicole was on a day pass from from St. Joe's, from the mental health unit at St. Joe's at West 5th campus when she took her own life. And so that raises lots of questions. You know, in fact, she met with a member of her healthcare team an hour before she made a suicide video, a goodbye video. You know, what did that healthcare worker see? What didn't they see? What could have been done better? What could have been done differently? Lots of questions around that that are unanswered. And for Nicole's mom, one of the biggest questions that she has that haunts her, and she may never get an answer, is how did this happen? Until Nicole was 16 years old, she appeared to be healthy and happy and was living the life of any typical teenager. And then literally within a few days when she turned 16, everything changed. And her mom may never understand or know why.
You say that, and I was actually blown away reading about, you know, as they call Carol Wonder Woman, raising these four children.
Yeah. Yeah.
Saving enough for all of them to be able to go to Europe.
Yeah.
Just really incredible. And after, you know, after a divorce, just the deep concern. And I think so many people, I think everybody would benefit from going to a counselor, you know, fairly frequently. But so many people, especially who were the product of divorce, and the mother, Carol, insisting that that happened, I thought was incredible.
She, she was proactively, acutely aware of the importance of mental health. She's a single mom raising four daughters, and she was concerned that the divorce may be affecting her girls in a negative way, and so she got them a therapist, and you know, really doing all the right things and maybe then some, like taking that extra step that a lot of families might not even frankly think about.
Mm-hmm.
Wanting to her girls to be, you know, healthy in every sense of the word. And yet, even with all of that going on, Nicole became profoundly ill. And it just speaks to, that one in four or one in five of us, I mean, she had four daughters and one of them became mentally ill. And, you know, you can grow up in a loving household as Nicole did. You can be a great athlete as Nicole was. You can, you know, you can be doing everything right, but mental illness, you know, doesn't, it's not picky about who it selects. And you know, when Nicole was 16, she had her first major breakdown.
Yeah, I was really struck with this this moment you describe, where Nicole is in Europe on a trip and complaining about not feeling well,
right?
As it's filtered back to Carol, and I guess the teachers or whoever was supervising denied or wouldn't let her go to the hospital, or said she was fine. Well, at the same time, these other students were able to go to the hospital. Can you clarify that for me?
So you're right. Nicole's on her big class trip to Europe, and she's acting out in a way that she, like, completely out of character for her. And her mom back here in Hamilton is getting phone calls from Europe, and she's wondering what the heck's going on. And she, at one point, Carol says to the teachers who are chaperoning, she says, "Look, I'm really concerned about Nicole's behavior. This is really strange. Do you think you could take her to the hospital and just get her checked out and make sure nothing's wrong?" And the teachers tell her that, no, everything will be fine and that that's unnecessary. But in the meantime, they take two, according to Carol, they take two other students to the hospital to be checked out because they have stomach aches. And I use that story in my feature because I think it just illustrates how we often think of these things in general as a society. You know, we're quick to be concerned and be aware of a physical illness, and we accept that, and we think, okay, when you have that, you go to a doctor and you get it checked out and you take care of it. But when it comes to mental health, we are much more reluctant. We're much more reluctant to admit that something is going on and that we need to seek help for it. You know, it just, you wouldn't hesitate to take teenagers on a school trip in for a stomach ache, but when someone's behaving strangely, you know, teachers were reluctant to do anything. So, I mean, we've got such a long way to go.
Yeah.
With understanding and accepting and talking about it. And, you know, there is no shame in going to the doctor and having something like that checked out. So Carol has all kinds of questions around that still to this day, 4 years later.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Another thing that I was very taken with was, I wonder about in situations like these, and having spent time in cities with subways or more extensive infrastructure, the role that suicide has on other parties that are involved, in this instance, the truck driver. And I was incredibly taken with what the family said, that the truck didn't kill Nicole, it was her illness, and their desire to really reach out to the truck driver. And
their thoughts are with the truck driver all the time. They talk about him a lot. They've never met him. I don't think they know his name. But it weighs on them that he had to go through that. You know, here's a guy who's just driving his truck, doing his job. And, you know, this woman literally falls out of the sky. And they are concerned that that truck driver has that to live with forever. And they want that truck driver to know that they don't in any way blame him for anything that happened. That it was, they don't blame Nicole either, they blame her mental illness. And they even go further, which is to thank the truck driver, because you know, he must have done some pretty fancy driving and managed to keep his composure, because there were no other injuries. I mean, you can only imagine you know, there could have been more fatalities with cars piling up and terrible things happening on the highway. But they think about him often, and they've even said that someday perhaps they'll have the opportunity to meet him in person and to tell him that that they're sorry for what happened to him.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add that I've forgotten?
Well, our editor-in-chief, Paul Burton, came to me and asked me if I thought that this was a hopeful story. And my initial reaction to that was hopeful. You know, how could it be hopeful? We have this poor young woman who has died a terrible death, and all these people who have been forever changed because of it. But then I thought more about it, and I realized that, you know, through this story itself, hope is being generated. You know, that by the very act of the Patnaud family sharing Nicole's story, they are telling other families that they're not alone. They're telling all of us that it's okay to ask for help. And they're giving us all permission to realize that there is no shame in any of this. So, you know, their gift to us, the Patnaud's gift to all of us, is sharing Nicole's story in the hopes that it will help somebody else.
I think that's incredibly important, and I hope this does help.
I do too.
Thank you, Susan, for taking the time.
Thank you.
If you need any help or know anyone who does, you can contact the Youth Wellness Center at 905-522-1155, extension 31725, or COAST, the Crisis Outreach and Support Team, at 905-972-8338, or the Barrett Center at 905-529-7878. For a further list of places to contact, check thespec.com and look for Susan's story.